Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Wait, What? Why? The podcast that ponders the origins behind the things that we do. Thank you for taking the time to join us today as we discuss the origins of wedding traditions. I'm Nicole Gallagher.
And I'm Dennis Gallagher.
How you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. We've had a busy day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Feeling good.
I'm putting Den to work, helping me set up for the semi-formal dance at the middle school this weekend. So he's, you know.
I'm doing the helping, the lugging, the whatever it is. Yeah, logistics.
Manly work.
Yeah, definitely doing the man work.
I appreciate it.
No problem.
And so will everyone else. Hopefully it goes well tomorrow.
That's what I'm here for. Well, if it doesn't, it won't because we didn't try, that's for sure.
Yeah.
No, good day. How you doing?
Good. It's exciting to, it's the first time in 3 years that we've been able to even pull this off. So it's very exciting.
The COVID has canceled the last couple of years, so to speak. So 3 years it's been, huh?
Yeah. And it's been, you know, just like COVID has kind of altered a lot of things, you know, like things that we do differently. It's kind of the same for us. So instead of just having a semi-formal dance, we've changed it to what I'm calling the semi-formal spectacular, which, you know, we'll have cornhole and a gaga pit and everything will be outside. And we have, you know, food trucks come in. And so it will be like a really cool, fun event instead of just a dance in the cafeteria.
You're calling it the semi-formal extravaganza, would you say?
I called it semi-formal social extravaganza. No, it was a semi-formal social spectacular.
Spectacular. That sounds very middle school. Yes. That sounds very middle school. I'm sure it will be spectacular.
But yes. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of effort went into it. So, tomorrow's the day.
And tomorrow's the day. Fingers crossed the weather stays nice and we can erect some wedding tents and dance floors and all that in preparation for it.
Seeing as you decided to have no plan B, the weather has no choice but to be good, right?
I mean, that's what the principal said. He said, what if we have to make the call? And I was like, nope, not happening. It's going to be outside and it's going to be beautiful.
Right. So, you know what, Mother Nature.
Positive thinking.
Get your crap together. Yes. Yeah. No, it's all good. So, yeah, again, busy day, end of the week. We're behind on releasing this again. So, again, busy week. We apologize.
I'm trying. I can't.
Average Joe's here. I should say indie podcast. We're doing it all, juggling it all, and trying to find time to talk on the airwaves.
I really do not like being late. If anyone who knows me well, I stress out about it, but it really has been busy couple of months. So, school's almost over a couple of weeks, and then hopefully we can.
You can exhale a little bit.
Well, I was going to say, hopefully we can get a bunch of episodes recorded so that we don't get in this predicament later on in the season.
We can get
ahead
of the curve rather
than
the
curve. Still, I'm hoping that we can actually video record our year anniversary podcast.
That would be nice.
We'll see.
We'll see.
How nice it is.
Right.
But we're going to give it a go.
Do we have to dress up?
No.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Just wear big sweatshirts and all frumpy.
Who cares?
Fair enough.
It's normal,
That's
right?
It's easy. Sure.
This is what we do. It's just a glimpse into what we do, how we do it.
Yeah, 100%.
All right.
Oh, speaking of an on-camera thing, I'd tell a little tease one of our daughters, seeing as I think it's kind of funny. So our daughter Cameron, we talked about a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. She does her streaming and Twitches and whatever she does, and I don't know any of that stuff, but she's way into it and has a fair following and whatnot.
She's been on our podcast. Yeah. She did a bonus podcast with
me. And she's passionate about it.
Yes.
So she was freaking out earlier this week. She couldn't get her camera to work, right, on her computer.
Right.
And had troubleshooted everything to the wind. And all over, it was the little switch that
on the laptop, the little
tiny switch right next to the camera, the manual shut off. So I just think it's funny that as savvy as the next generation is, the little switch escaped her.
Yeah,
welcome to stress.
She'll totally have to help us with everything when we record. What do we do?
Right, but I knew it was. I knew the switch was there. So anyways, yes, it'd be nice to be able to record ourselves and, like I said, grow.
Yeah, we'll see.
Cool. So what are we talking about today there, girly?
We are talking about wedding traditions. It's that time of year. It's June now, again, with COVID being over. There's a ton of weddings happening. And Cameron, actually, speaking of Cameron, said, I want to know about some of the origins, traditions from weddings. So that's what we're going with.
Well, I know a thing or two about weddings, don't I?
Yes, you do.
Yes, I do.
I don't know. So do
another
we
story
talk
for another day.
About, no, not necessarily. Sure. But I was going to ask you, right? So, like, what? So, like, our wedding was not traditional at all.
Super cool, though.
Yeah. Well, I loved it.
Yep.
But it was very small. We didn't do any of the traditional wedding things that people do, but we're going to talk about traditional wedding things. So what are some traditions? Like,
You can't see the bride the night before the wedding, right? Yeah. You know, the groom can't see the bride. Bachelor parties, you know, bachelorette parties.
Bridal parties.
Bridal showers, right? Things like that.
The proposals, the ring, the white dress.
Yep, yep, all that stuff. Well, so we did some of that stuff.
Cutting the cake.
Yeah, cutting the cake. Yeah, sharing
the
cake. Stuffing the cake in each other's faces. Yeah, throwing the bouquet. First dance, you know, father-daughter dance, which we did that stuff too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what else? Try to think. Yeah, he said throwing the bouquet, the garter.
The garter, yes, I did have that.
The chicken dance, which we didn't do either. Yeah. That's a definite tradition, at least local tradition. Right. I don't know. What else?
That's all. I don't know. I think you pretty much said a lot of it.
Well, I said them all. I think we said them all.
Yeah. Something.
Something borrowed, something blue, stolen. Oh, not stolen. No.
I don't know. Borrowed.
I skipped a beat. That's right. You're not supposed to steal
blue,
things.
Something
Even
blue.
Before the wedding, you're not supposed to steal things? Just saying.
You're not supposed to steal it all.
Well, if it's adrift on deck.
So our tradition, I guess, with us, you proposed. And what else? What other tradition was there? We did do a father-daughter dance, but my father actually also married us.
He did. Traditional garb, right? It was all Scottish traditional garb.
Yeah.
I wore my colors. You wore your colors.
Yes. And
he wore a kilt. So that's
yes,
traditional.
He did. Yeah. Right?
He wore more than a kilt. He wore his whole traditional, outfit that he wears. His Highland outfit.
Yeah.
Trying to think as far as what else
but
we did.
But we didn't cut the cake or any of that stuff.
No, what do we have? Like a cupcake?
I don't even think I ate a cupcake. We had like a barbecue. It was on the beach.
It was tremendous. It was great.
It was awesome.
York, Maine, right on
Very
the edge
small.
Of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Super cool. We rented a whole giant house.
Yeah, you could see the Nubble Lighthouse.
Slept like 20 people in the house. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big party. We basically had a party.
Not really traditional. So
it wasn't traditional at all.
Yes.
So anyway, I just thought, you know.
You're going to delve into some of where those traditions come from, that kind of thing?
Well, there's so many that I narrowed it down. So
you say this every single time that there's so much, there's too much, you narrow it down.
You know.
It's going to become a catchphrase.
This is why I'll always be a learner. There's so much to learn. There's
so much. A forever learner? A life learner?
A lifelong learner.
Lifelong learner.
Yes. There's so many questions you have, and then. Megan brought something else up to me, and I was like, no way. So I had to look into that. So anyway, for today, we might do a part two wedding episode for June. I don't know. But for today, we are looking at the origins of the wedding ring and then the bridal party.
Okay.
So that's what I thought we could dig into.
Okay, cool. Sure.
Are you ready?
Bring it.
All right, here we go.
Here we go.
So I found this website, actually. It was titled... Today I Found Out, it's the name of it, quote, Today I Found Out, Feed Your Brain, unquote. So a lot of the information I have on the origins of wedding rings is going to come from this website. And then I also found out that they have a podcast as well. It's called The Brain Feed Show. So if you like the stuff that you hear about the wedding ring, you might want to check out their podcast.
Oh, shout out to them. Sure.
Yeah. Some believe that the oldest recorded exchange of wedding rings comes from ancient Egypt about 4,800 years ago.
Man, I tell you, the Egyptians were nothing but impressive, were they?
They were very glamorous.
Very impressive, though. Like, this is a civilization, just very, very.
I feel like this is rude to say this, but I feel like they were very vain with the...
That's not probably
you know,
wrong.
With like the makeup. And then remember with like the fat, they would put like animal fat that scented on their heads so it would melt as the night went on. So they would smell like perfumey. We talked about this in another podcast.
Yeah, I think I remember that. That is still gross. Yeah.
So,
I would not be happy
but, like,
as the night went
with
on.
With the makeup and the scents and the... All the jewelry and all that, they were very
ostentatious
into the way they looked.
Sure.
For sure.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
They were conceited. You could say that. It appears as though the ancient Egyptians might have been kind of conceited.
Vain.
Yeah, a little vain.
At least the ones who had the money.
And they were tremendously accomplished. So maybe
higher social classes.
Maybe they had something to be vain about.
Right. For sure.
Right.
So, 4,800 years ago
okay.
Is the oldest recorded exchange of wedding rings. during that time, though, rings were made of like natural materials such as reeds and papyrus and things like that. The circle of the ring is a symbol of eternity. So no beginning and no end, yep. Kind of like the infinity symbol. Not only to the Egyptians, but to many other ancient cultures. The hole in the center of the ring also had some significance. It wasn't just considered a space, but rather a gateway or door leading to things and events, both known and unknown. So to give a woman a ring signifies never-ending and immortal love.
It's also a place to put your finger. The hole.
The ring.
Just saying.
Right. There's so
it's functional as
so
well.
So many,
you know.
Yes.
Yeah, it's representative and functional.
Yes, yes. So the materials.
I'm the hired help.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
He brings the fun.
It's a place to put your finger.
Right? That might be the name of this podcast.
Place to put
it's
your
a
finger.
Place to put your finger.
Well,
no,
it really
people
is.
People could read so
well.
So
maybe
many things
you know.
Into that.
Hey, you know, we plant the seed. They run with it.
So. The materials, obviously, that those rings were made of back then didn't last very long. And soon they were substituted with rings made of leather, bone, ivory, and more sturdy kinds of materials. And it ended up becoming, obviously, the more expensive the material, the more love you show to the receiver. And the value of the ring would also demonstrate the wealth of the giver.
I wonder if it was 3 months' salary back then. Right. Imagine being a pharaoh. You wouldn't even be able to. How big would that ring be?
I know that you're thinking about your time.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah, we're not 1,400 years
old. But I guess with inflation, maybe it would still be 3 months' salary. Who knows?
Maybe.
I don't know.
That's funny.
Is that the average?
I think that's what a rule of thumb I. The way I remember it, yeah.
The listeners out there.
Yeah. Let us know.
Any recent proposals? What's the rule of thumb? 3 months'
three
salary?
3 months' salary.
That's a lot.
Bunch of cheapskates. Right? Get up the money.
Yes.
And the Egyptians weren't cheapskates.
No.
We've covered that.
Yeah, we did. So after the Egyptians, obviously, the Romans who come up in everything we talk about.
In come the Romans.
They eventually adopted this tradition, but with their own twist. So rather than offering a ring to a woman as a symbol of love, they awarded them as a symbol of ownership.
Oh, that is a different twist. Okay.
So Roman men would claim their women by giving them a ring. Roman betrothal rings were later made of iron and called annulus pronobis. They symbolized strength and permanence.
Hmm.
It was also said that the Romans were the first to engrave their rings.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
Strength and permanence, like
strength
handcuffs.
Strength and permanence. Permanence, yeah.
Okay.
Like handcuffs.
Right? Dominance.
It's like slavery.
Exactly.
Yes. You are mine now. Thank you. It was not until about 860 that the Christians used the ring in marriage ceremonies. But even then, it wasn't a simple plain band as we kind of have it today. It was usually highly decorated with engraved doves, lyres, two-linked hands, things like that. The church discouraged such rings as heathenish. And around the 13th century, wedding and betrothal rings were considerably simplified and given a more spiritual look, which was expressed by a bishop when he dubbed it a symbol of the union of hearts. So it was eventually accepted into Christianity, but at first it was like frowned upon.
Interesting. That is definitely something I didn't know.
So there is a couple I found. So again, I thought this was really interesting. Someone was like, you know, as you're looking into it, they're like, well, why do you wear it on the fourth, you know, finger of your left hand?
Yeah, why do you?
So there's various theories.
Huh.
So in history, they've been worn on different fingers and different hands, including the thumb. It didn't matter if it was left or right. So according to some traditions believed to have been derived from the Romans, the wedding ring is worn on the left-hand ring finger because it was thought to be a vein in the finger referred to as the vena amoris or the vein of love.
Really?
Said to be directly connected to the heart.
Yeah, that is very interesting.
However, that's not true.
It's not based on any science whatsoever,
but
though.
It is
huh?
a myth that still remains, you know, by romantics, I guess the number one reason why rings are worn on the fourth finger of the left hand.
Okay. I consider this my love finger.
Your love finger.
Right?
Yes. I like that.
Amorous finger?
Oh, no.
Huh?
I just like scrolled all the way down my screen and now I lost it.
Geez.
All right, here
we go. You overscrolled?
I overscrolled. I got crazy.
You're crazy.
All right. Another theory is that early Christian marriages had a ritual to wear the wedding ring on the third finger. And as the priest recited during the binding in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, he would take the ring and touch the thumb, the index finger, and the middle finger, and then while uttering amen, would place the ring on the ring finger, which would then seal the marriage.
Okay.
Which sounds pretty reasonable.
Plausible, sure.
Yeah, like that kind of seems like
it makes sense.
The most reasonable
it's thing, not, it's I not guess. Quirky and crazy, sure.
No.
That makes sense.
And then another theory is that because gold is traditional for wedding rings, that finger would be the least used, and it would be the, you know, less wear and tear.
I wouldn't
on
get
the
banged
ring.
Up. Yeah. Obviously, your forefinger and your thumb probably get the most use, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. I never really thought
your
of that.
Your first three fingers, really.
Yep.
You know, the last two are just
extras
there for, for support.
Right.
So, yeah, it was said that maybe because of the metals that were used, that that was, you know, their theory for using
that. Makes sense.
That
makes, because the rings do get banged up, and they'd be even more banged up there on the other fingers, I would imagine. That makes
absolutely.
Good sense. That's actually practical.
So I don't know which of those theories is, you know, true, but all reasonable, plausible
all reasonable.
Theories.
Yep. 100%.
So when did engagement rings and wedding rings become two separate rings?
Uh-huh.
Is another question that I found an answer to on that lovely little website. In medieval England, getting married was remarkably simple. All the couple had to do was offer each other their present consent. And often that consent was expressed through the giving and accepting of an object called a wed. And this wed was often a ring. Thus, a wedding is a ceremony where a man offered a wedding ring and she accepted it. This became the norm in the 8th century. However, there was confusion about the legitimacy of the weddings because, you know, they could deny that it ever happened because it was just like a present consent
hearsay?
At the moment. Yes.
That's
there was
crazy.
Nothing else that went along with that.
Okay.
So because of that,
because of witnesses.
Yes. Right. So that's what it, because witnesses and clergymen weren't required to be present. It could just be like you and me, like, here, here's a ring. Oh, yeah, we're married.
Right. And you wake up in the morning and be like, oh, my God, he's a fathead. No. I'm all set. Yeah.
Never happened.
That would never happen. No. It might happen to me.
Anyway.
Yeah.
It's like that Carrie Underwood song.
Buyer's remorse.
Right.
Wake up and be like, what was I thinking? Yeah, it is like that Carrie Underwood song.
Because of this, anyway, in the 12th century, the Christian church declared marriage to be a holy sacrament and ended up establishing a church ceremony. Rings were part of the ceremony, and it became the rule that no man should place any type of ring on a woman's hand unless he meant to get married.
Okay.
So before this, rings did not always signify marriage. They were often given as like tokens of devotion and love. So it's possible that the two different types of rings emerged when the church codified marriage, the more personal engagement ring, and then the church sanctioned wedding ring.
Okay. The two bands.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then I had a fun fact that not all cultures wear wedding rings on their ring fingers still today. Couples in England, France, and the U.S. wear their wedding rings on their left hand, but couples in India, Germany, and Russia prefer the right hand.
Interesting. That I did not know either.
Yeah. And some Indian traditions even require that a bride wear a toe ring instead.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you got shoes on. No one will ever know you're married.
Well, maybe.
Right? Well, you'd always have to have open-toed shoes.
Yeah, which I think is very common.
You put your sneakers on and go for a jog, though. I mean, you know, no one's going to know you're married. I'm just saying.
Do you ever notice who's married?
Everyone looks for the rings.
I never look.
People look all the time.
Not me.
No, you don't look at anything,
Mr.
honey.
I'm oblivious.
Most people look, is what I should have said. You could meet a man that has a ring on every finger, and I'd say, you see all those rings? You'd be like, what rings?
It's true.
Yes.
I know.
And he could be wearing sneakers, and you'd miss a toe ring.
Yep. I would never know.
No one would know.
I would never know. I wouldn't know for certain. I don't notice anything.
That's interesting. On their toe. That's very
toe
interesting.
Rings.
That's in India?
In certain Indian cultures, not just India.
Interesting. Cool.
India is like such a diverse country. But anyway.
And huge too, yeah.
So men started wearing wedding rings, not until like it says up until the past century, wedding rings were just worn by women. Christian church promoted exchanging wedding rings as a way of keeping men
I
faithful.
was just gonna say, you beat me to it. You beat me to it. Because men were fighting the good fight, quotes, and not wearing rings. And finally they were like, hey, come on.
This wear this ring to show that you belong to me, and then I'll just do what I want. I'll just go off about my
I'm
business.
sure that's
And
not far from the
it's like
truth.
I'll wear it on my toe so
Right.
no one can
And I'll wear
tell.
tennis shoes all the time.
But it wasn't until World War II that the dual rings or the two rings caught on, and American and European soldiers wore wedding rings as a way to remember their wives and sweethearts back home.
Totally makes
And the
sense.
tradition continued through the Korean War, and then after that, it just caught on for civilians as well.
Nice. That makes perfect sense also. Yep.
And
I
then,
love the evolution of things. I think
isn't
that's cool.
it
Yeah.
neat
Yep. Very
how?
cool.
So then, you know, you're like, all right, well, how did diamonds become a part of the, like, why is the diamond ring now the engagement ring?
I
Like,
didn't know I was supposed to get you a diamond.
shut up. Yeah, where is
Where is it?
it?
Oops.
Whoopsies.
I knew.
Yes, I have a beautiful
Yes, you
diamond.
do.
Anyway, up until the 40s, 1940s, diamonds were just one of the numerous gems that was used in engagement ring stone, so it wasn't commonplace to have a wedding diamond ring. But it became popular. Can you take a guess why?
When the diamond became the most precious stone.
No.
No, I don't know why.
Two reasons. Well, two reasons. One, De Beers.
What?
De Beers is the corporation, the giant diamond, you know.
Conglomerate. Okay, I have
Yes,
no
they
idea.
controlled. So De Beers controlled the majority of the world's diamonds at
Okay.
the time. This is like the early 1900s. And then when people stopped buying diamonds during the
The
Great
Depression.
Depression,
Yep.
yeah, in the 30s, they launched an epic marketing campaign, and they gave all the Hollywood actresses diamonds to wear in their movies. And De Beers made diamonds glamorous symbols of romance and recruited Pablo Picasso and Salvador Dali to illustrate their ad posters. They communicated that their diamonds were works of art. And then in 1947, De Beers introduced the advertising slogan, "A diamond is forever."
Huh.
And then in 1953, Marilyn Monroe made "Diamonds are a girl's best friend" a household
She
phrase.
did coin that phrase, didn't she? That's
Yes.
right.
And then by the 50s and 60s, diamonds were in full swing.
Holy
And
cow.
given expensive diamonds was a man's way of showing a woman that she was worth it.
And it started from a marketing campaign.
Yep. And there, the percentage, through De Beers' marketing efforts, the percentage of the United States brides who received diamond engagement rings jumped from 10% in 1939 to 80% in 1990.
That is a hell of a marketing campaign
Yep.
with the most precious, expensive
Yeah.
jewel or gem that there is, rather.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Not
Good for
nuts.
them. That's awesome.
I never, you know, and that's another thing, like, where I'm like, and I think it was Cameron who brought it up, who said, why do men propose? Like, why do they offer a diamond ring? And I was like, I don't know. And it, again, never occurred to me. It's just the way it always was.
Sure, yeah. And
A
it was
man
that way with our
proposes, you
fathers and
get
our
a
grandfathers and
diamond.
whatever. And
And,
so,
but that's, I mean,
wow.
not a couple generations ago
Yeah.
from us that it wasn't even a thing.
Oh, it's a fairly recent thing for sure. And it's born of a marketing campaign, which is fascinating.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I guess a lot of things are
No,
born out
it
of
is. It is. But I
the
just,
beer and everything else we talk about, right?
yeah. Everyone go to school for marketing. Jeez and crow. It's fantastic.
You could be shaping culture with your
Absolutely.
marketing campaign.
Yeah,
Well,
who
it did
knew?
shape
It
culture, yeah.
totally did.
So now I want to talk about the wedding party. And this was my most shocking part so far of the stuff I researched. Like, there's so much. And I know I say that all the time, but I wanted to look at like the wedding cake traditions, and I wanted to look at why the white dress, and I have all that stuff. But this one, I was like, I have to include this in the first episode because I was like, what? Are you kidding
All
me?
right, I'm excited. That's
So,
good.
wedding parties, right?
Yeah.
Typically, like, you've been a best man,
Yeah, I have. I've never been a best man,
No,
actually.
just a groomsman?
Yep, many times,
I've
though.
never been a maid of honor either. I've just been in the bridal party for a few, not a lot, a few weddings.
At least five or six.
For our wedding, our bridal party was just our family.
Right.
My
father didn't even know I was going to ask him to stand with me, and he was embarrassing. You know, he thought he was underdressed and everything else, and it was, very informal.
Yes, it was very informal.
However, he was my best man at another time.
Yes.
And he was dressed properly and prepared.
So now might be a good time to Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well, I've been married before. No big deal. The first time was much more traditional, and ours was a hell of a lot more fun and fruitful.
Oh, yeah. Yes. For sure. I had fun.
Yeah, I'm in fruitful.
It was my one and only. And it's worked out for me, so.
Well, you're welcome. Thank
you.
No, yes.
Hopefully, you got whatever learning you need
to
get
practice,
done.
Practice, right?
I got the
you
better
got
man.
It. That's
for
right.
For sure.
I think you did. And we still embarrass my father on game day.
We do.
Back to the wedding parties.
Yeah, so wedding parties, again, we didn't have one, but, traditionally, what's the wedding party's duties? Like, what?
Certainly in a church wedding, and again, in my experience, I was married in the Catholic Church the first time, and so they're ushers, right? That's what they are, is they're ushers. So the people that are in your wedding party, the best man probably, make sure you have everything you need. Does the best man have the rings? I want to say
yes.
The best man has the rings and gives them
to the
ring bearers. Yep, gives them to the ring bearers, but
they're
the best man's
responsible
for it. That best man's responsible with making sure you get your butt to the church on time and, in the right shape. But the rest of them were ushers. So in the other times that I was in the wedding parties, I would seat people, bride or groom side, that kind of thing. I'm sure there's more formal and less formal functions, but that's what we do.
Like the bachelor party.
Yeah, well, the bachelor party. The best man would organize. The bachelor, in my experience, organized the bachelor party, and the rest of them just, help with the kidnapping, so to speak. So that's my understanding.
Yes.
That was my responsibilities.
Yeah.
If there
By
was anyone,
disabled. You mean of the groom?
You had to make sure that he's completely unaware and bundled. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Again, in my experience.
Right.
Yes.
The bridal party, same. The maid of honor would be responsible for throwing a shower or a bachelorette party and organizing all that kind of stuff. And just making sure that the bride has everything she needs and can just, focus on herself.
Relax
and her
on
wedding.
Her, enjoy her day. Sure.
Right. So the history behind it was shocking to me.
All right. Enlighten.
So... I can't find, so there's multiple sources that say the same thing, but I can't find anything definitive about dates and origins of it. There's no specific date for like the beginnings of this, but wedding customs around the world were evolving at the same time. There's many stories, there's folklore, nothing can be dated definitively. But I did find numerous things that say that the groomsmen, the bridal party for the groomsmen actually started out as people who were entrusted by the groom to help ensure the bride's safety to the wedding during the ceremony and later in the groom's home. Sometimes they were called the bride's knights. Sometimes Laura says that the groomsman or best man would kidnap the bride from her home and possible disapproving parents. So if they thought that something wasn't going to go right and the parents would disapprove, or if the bride was not going to show up to the wedding, that would be the job of the groomsman, would be to go get her,
kidnap her
and take her to the wedding.
There's a
book called The Everything Wedding Book that says that the best man would help the groom fight for the bride if there are other potential suitors. Once the bride has been brought to the ceremony, some lore says that the groomsman and the best man would then guard the bride, possibly with swords, so nothing interrupts the ceremony until it's complete.
That sounds awfully violent, doesn't
it?
Yes.
This is said to be why the best man and the groom stand to the right of the bride, so they'll be able to reach their swords easily.
Interesting.
So, lots
that of... That still holds as far as where people stand.
Right.
Yeah, that's funny.
So, fun facts. The tradition of the best man is thought to have originated with the Germanic Goths of the 16th century. he was the best man for specifically the job of stealing the bride from her neighboring community or disapproving family, and was probably the best swordsman too. And in some early traditions, a groomsman were called the bride's knights, like I said, because they were trying to protect her and her dowry and her virginity, and assisted her kidnapping.
That was a lot going on right there.
Yeah, right?
That was a lot going on.
Well,
imagine having to like have your friends be like, listen, I like her. Let's kidnap her. I don't care what her parents think. There's a lot going on right there. As long as she was consenting, I guess all the rest of it I can wrap my head around.
I'm not sure there was consent happening. No, it was literally like a kidnapping. We're going to take her whether she wants to be there or not. And then once the ceremony is over, too bad.
Too bad, so sad. Right.
You're married to me.
Now you get the ring on your finger, too bad.
Yes.
Circle of life, place to put your finger.
Yeah.
Okay.
Isn't that terrible?
That is terrible.
I was like, what? Jeez. That can't be real.
The best swordsman is your best man.
Yeah. Well, it helps.
Apparently, it did. Apparently, it did. Yeah. All it had to do was see people. Yeah. But, okay.
So, in for women, the Reader's Digest had said that this goes back as far as biblical times, that women had other females stand with them, noting that the wedding of Jacob to Leah and Rachel, they were literally the bride's maids that were in attendance. In ancient Rome, bridesmaids helped escort the bride to the ceremony safely and were believed to also help ward off spirits or others who wanted to hurt her. And they would do that by dressing similarly to the bride, which is why I think they have like the bridesmaids' dresses.
Oh, so they would fool the spirits or whatever. Okay.
You know, given all the superstitions and traditions we did like at the beginning, you know, September, October, that sounds legitimate.
Of course it does.
Yeah, absolutely. And then this goes along with that. Due to potential harm to the bridesmaids, what is it? The Wedding Planners Institute of Canada notes that it was actually not an honor to be a bridesmaid because they could potentially get hurt, especially if they're dressing as the bride to protect the bride, and then something happened to them. So it wouldn't necessarily be an honor. You'd be like, it would be like drinking, you know, like being at the knight's table and being the guy who tastes the stuff, you know, the food there to make sure it's not poisoned.
Right. That's great.
Like that kind of honor.
No.
Like that kind of honor.
Right.
Let's see. Fun facts about that. The chief bridesmaid might be in charge of the dowry, and which would be like, you know, the purse that they offer to the husband. But today it would be like holding the bride's bouquet, as you know how the bride, maid of honor holds the bride's bouquet they do that. In some traditions, bridesmaids led the bridegroom to the church, and the groomsmen led the bride. And then in medieval times, some bridesmaids made the bride drink and eat a concoction of plum buns and spiced ale to restore energies.
That sounds gross.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Part of the job was to walk carefully. If a bridesmaid stumbled on the way to the altar, the superstition was that she would never marry.
Oh, my goodness.
I love those kinds of superstitions. They're my favorite.
All the bridesmaids would be wearing flats.
Right.
They would no one would be in heels.
Maid of honor once tended to the bride-to-be for several days prior to the wedding, making sure the bridal wreath was made and helping her get dressed. Bridesmaids also helped undress her, making sure to remove all pins. And if a pin ended up being remaining in the dress, it was a bad luck for the wedding.
Oh, lots of superstitions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Being the, like way more superstitions for the bride, though, than the groom. I didn't see any for the groom. This is all just for the brides.
Oh, well, they were pulling the groom out of the pub, you know what I mean, and dragging him to the church because he forgot what day it was.
Right.
Yeah. You can't be superstitious of that. You'd never get married.
Also, this is another one. So being a bridesmaid was considered a good way to procure a husband. In the 16th century, if you had served as a bridesmaid 3 times without getting married yourself, it was believed that the evil spirits cursed you. And to break the spell, you'd have to be a bridesmaid 4 times for a total of 7 rounds on the wedding circuit.
Jeez, I'm crow. That's a lot of pressure.
Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah.
That's like a bizarre super, like, who comes up with that?
I have no idea.
It's so crazy.
Crazy people. I have no idea. The town kook back then came up with that.
Mm.
Wow.
Let's see. The bride's friends would shower her, again, alluding to the bridal shower, with gifts before a wedding in cases where her father didn't approve of the groom and wouldn't provide the necessary dowry for her to marry the man of her choice. And then those gifts would become part of the dowry.
Okay, so the responsibility kind of fell on the bridesmaids to fill that void of dowry. Right. Okay.
Again, a lot of responsibility. Yeah,
no doubt. Bridesmaids. No doubt.
Huh. So that's really it.
That's what you had on this?
That's what I had
it's
on that.
It's still quite a bit.
I was really thrown by the kidnapping of the bride.
I mean, it's similar to what I did with you, really. I kidnapped you. I kept you in the basement for a couple of months before you agreed to marry me.
Yeah.
I seemed normal.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you came around.
Eventually. It took a while.
It took a while. Right?
Took a lot of convincing.
It did take a lot of convincing. I had to take the paper off the windows and show you the sunshine and all types of things.
You're terrible.
Well, it was a simple kidnapping.
Yeah.
That's horrible story, actually.
Isn't that terrible? I just was like, no way. And Megan, actually, that's why Cameron was asking about wedding traditions. And Megan was the one who's like, you have to look up the origins of the bridal party. You're going to be shocked.
Oh, she had looked into it.
Yeah, she had heard another podcast about
okay,
it.
Okay, okay. So wow, yeah. No kidding. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, no, that's, you know, as always, it's cool to learn the origins and the evolution of things like that. I mean, the Egyptians and the Romans and the Germanic people played such prominence in so many things that we look into. It's those civilizations were just so huge in modern history, you know?
Well, it's amazing how whatever they did or believed affects our culture now and the things
total
that we do.
Ripple effect.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Ripple effect to this day. Yeah. Wow.
For sure.
Yeah, no, cool. I enjoyed that.
Yeah,
thanks.
Good.
Thanks,
I'm glad.
Baby.
You're
thanks.
Welcome. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
So tell us about your wedding traditions. Maybe we can, you know, have a part to dig into the origins behind them. If you have any other questions, like I said, like why a white wedding dress or why did the bride and groom cut the cake and feed it to each other? You know, those are things I looked into too. And believe it or not, there is an origin behind all of it.
Oh, and I'm sure there's many,
it comes from somewhere.
Yeah, there's many other things like, there's all types of, I know like at Jewish weddings, you know, they have all different
the
types of traditions.
And
you know,
you, on the glass,
sure. And you touched on, you know, Indian and,
and
on and on and on, you know, all over the world. I'm sure there's a different traditions and whatnot, but
so, this
was kind of geared at what has evolved into an American tradition at this point, and the traditions that we still practice. But
we would love to hear from you.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And, like, what your traditions were or your, like, wedding taboos or superstitions. I love to hear about superstitions.
Yep, very cool.
And, we want to hear from you. So you can reach out to us on our social media. Our handle on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook is Wait What Why Pod, and you can always email us at Wait What? I always mess up our email.
What,
why
it's okay. Just
is
relax,
that?
Honey. You're in charge of the whole program. Go ahead. You just say
waitwhatwhypod@gmail.com.
That was impressive.
Right? I just don't know.
Just
every time I stumble over our email
your
address.
Brain goes so fast, your mouth can't keep up. That's
so,
all.
So, yeah, email us.
Please.
Or reach out to us on social media.
We
and
are accessible.
You can help support our podcast by rating, leaving a review on any of your podcast directories or by becoming a patron.
Or tell your friends.
Tell your friends. 100%. Share your favorite episode.
Yep.
Tell us what your favorite episode is. I'd love to hear that. And spread the word. And as always, a big thank you to Francis for our podcast artwork.
Shout out, Francis.
And we will see you soon.
Yep. Sorry for the late release again, right?
We're
super busy as everyone else is, and we're doing the best we can.
If you're listening to this because you're preparing to be married soon, then congratulations. Good
luck. Congratulations. Watch out for the kidnapping, ladies.
Bye.
Bye.